Welcome to episode 38 of the Librarian's Guide to Teaching podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Jessica.
And on today's episode, we're talking about marketing your library instruction, either as a department or an individual librarian. But before we get started with our conversation, how are you doing? Anything exciting happening this week?
Doing good. I'm back on campus this week after missing some days. We're on like a 1 week home, 1 week on campus rotation. And I missed the last rotation because there was a COVID exposure in my son's class and we had to quarantine for the week. So we were all fine, but you know, anyone working from home with kids knows how hard it is, even just for a few days with a toddler. I do feel like I'm a bit more productive in ways at my desk too, with like the big computer and my snacks are limited and I don't have laundry staring me in the face. So especially after long stretches at home, it feels good to kind of just get out of the house and be on campus. And anyone who works from home alone might agree that one downside of it, even with all like the fun, positive stuff of like being able to cook and kind of balance work and life and stuff, it does kind of get lonely. And it, you know, it's fun to kind of go to work and enjoy chatting with the few colleagues that I do get to be there with. You know, we're on limited staff each week, so there's only a few people, but it's fun to just be like, hey, how's it going? And catch up and stuff like that. So as we see light at the end of this crazy COVID tunnel, it's kind of nice to have glimpses of normalcy a little bit. I felt like this week we saw more students as well than we have over the past couple of months. I'm not sure why. I think it might partially be the weather. I think they're escaping their dorms to kind of hang out in the courtyard we have right up front, which then eventually brings them inside to our little, like, we have like a little cafe for them inside where they can get snacks. So I feel like we definitely saw more students this week. So again, another mini sign of normalcy.
Yeah, just to go back for a second about the working from home alone thing. I've been doing it. I've only been going on campus one day a week. And so working from home is definitely lonely. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely a catch you in the hallway, catch up with you kind of person. And like, I miss that dynamic. I miss those little small opportunities to catch up with someone. You know, I remember, you know, over a year ago, like sometimes you would avoid walking past someone's office because you know they're going to keep you for 20 minutes. But like,
right.
Oh, I long for those. I long for those, you know, opportunities now. It's just, it's lonely. Yeah. And it's like, I've talked about this before, but it's distracting for me. Like I'm by myself. My kids are in daycare. I'm by myself and I just have all these weird expectations. So I'm excited to see the light at the end of the crazy COVID tunnel for sure. So what's going on with me this week? We are wrapping up our semester. It's the 15th week of our 15-week semester. The students are, they're going to go on a break next week. And then we start up again the first week of May. So it's a lot of wrapping up things, kind of preparation. But like one exciting, interesting thing that's going on that I don't think is getting enough traction is I live in New York, but I work in New Jersey and I'm a part of the ACRL New Jersey chapter. And we sent out our survey. We took a survey of how many academic librarians are going to attend ACRL this year, which is happening this week as we're recording it. Because we were kind of upset about the price not being reduced and concerned that so many of our people were not going to be able to attend. So we took a survey and, you know, what we expected to be true was true. And a lot of people aren't attending, me included. I definitely have FOMO going on right now. I'm following everything on Twitter, but like, it's not the same, but I have no budget. So, you know, we sent out this really great statement with a survey and, you know, I don't know if people are reading it. It's hard to tell sometimes, you know, if these things get traction, but I hope someone from ACRL at least saw it and, you know, thought twice about, costs of things and what like COVID really did to higher education and budgets moving forward. You know what, even if they, obviously it's too late now for the conference, but maybe they won't be so blind when they set their prices for their webinars or their courses, you know, maybe they think about it, you know, think about twice. So we'll see. So that was something exciting that I'm proud of, that my group, you know, took the effort to put that together and then also sent it out and just put it out there. You know, sometimes it's scary doing that, you know, you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be a negative naysayer or whatever, but like, you sometimes you feel like we felt strong that this message needs to be heard.
And I love that you guys had had data to back it up. Like yeah. It would have been totally valid enough just to go off anecdotally and just off of what's going on. That would have been valid enough, but to also have that data where it was like, what, 70% plus were not attending because they didn't have professional development or they didn't have the personal budget because of, you know, potential like furloughs and financial issues. And so to see that huge number and to then attach it to the letter was really powerful. So
yeah,
I'm in the same boat. You know, I don't get professional development like that anymore. My colleagues are presenting at ACRL. So, you know, my institution paid for their registration, but you know, that shouldn't have to be that way. Like we should be able to attend for professional development anyway. And right. It was astronomical for even a member, let alone the extra 100 and something for somebody like me, a non-member who stopped subscribing or stopped my registration, because even that's not covered for me anymore.
Right. So,
which we had that whole conversation with Alyssa in one of our previous episodes about, you know, paying for service and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I hope someone's hearing about it. So I'm excited that, you know, my group kind of sent that out.
Right. Cool.
Yeah. So just to kind of intro today's topic, you know, I was putting my notes together for this episode, I was really surprised that we haven't tackled this issue yet. You know, this is something that we've kind of worked towards for a while. Like you and I, we've had a lot to do with more marketing and outreach in terms of programming and maybe outside of the classroom, you know, formal experience, but we definitely, you know, have been strategic, at least at Berkeley, about our, you know, maybe not what people consider marketing, but as we go through the conversation, you know, it is a form of marketing. You're marketing your services to different audiences, different groups of people, you know, whether you think you're, you know, you have the marketing skills or not, you're, as an instruction librarian, I'm sure a lot of people could agree with us that you're coming up with ideas to get new supporters, new library advocates, and you're doing that through your marketing, whether, you know, whether it's formal or informal. So to get started, let's talk about, you know, first, do you market your library instruction and why should we market our instruction?
Yeah, I would say, you know, for many librarians, we have to market our instruction in some way, because if we rely on one-shots, which a lot of us do, and faculty reaching out to us to do those, we need to remind them of what we can offer. And I think a whole other conversation that we've kind of touched on before is goes back to a little bit of what you said before of like the whole services versus collaboration thing. It's like, you know, we still need to market because unfortunately we are still in this service model situation. A lot of people aren't fully integrated into the curriculum and things like that. And especially with new adjuncts or faculty joining each semester, if they are just getting used to our institution, how else will they really know unless they are the type of faculty who has had strong library relationships in the past, so they just know to reach out. But that's probably really rare. And I think it's different for librarians who offer credit bearing courses, who maybe they need to market to students who are going to sign up for their courses rather than to faculty. But how we market one-shots can really vary depending on what your institution looks like. And that's okay. Where I am now, our instruction team does coordinated outreach via email to our English department as a whole through our head of instruction. And then interested faculty fill out our request form, and then we split it up based on scheduling and like previous relationships and things like that. And the request form lives on our website for any faculty looking at our available resources. I'd be curious to know like what the percentage is of who stumbles on the form versus who comes to the form through our actual targeted outreach. I don't know how we'd figure that out, but it might be an interesting metric. In other cases, we do, a few people are designated librarians for certain disciplines, like nursing or marketing, based on like expertise that they have or a need for that specific campus. And so they do marketing, marketing outreach to those faculty, but then again, also let the faculty come to them. So it's like a two-prong approach. And then lastly, we're all encouraged to do our own outreach to faculty in any discipline that we want. So I personally don't have a liaison area. So I'm just part of the English's, the campus's English outreach. And then I do my own individual outreach to disciplines that are interesting to me. And I think partially because there's so many classes and programs at my university, there's almost 2,000 classes running this semester. I think that's why this multifaceted approach is kind of what they've been doing in this environment. And I think it's kind of working. I'm still kind of getting used to the lay of the land, even almost even a year and a half in. But I think that's partially why it works, because it's just so much and it's not really fully integrated in the same way it is at Berkeley. So it's a different situation.
Mm. So yeah, we market our instruction. You know, I think it's important to market your instruction because you are your library's best advocate. You know, you are best suited to promote your services and explain to people what you do and what you can do for them. We market our instruction in many ways, to name a few. We send out targeted emails, standardized emails. We target specific initiatives. I'll go into that a little bit later. You know, any type of institutional initiatives. We promote our instruction on our website. We promote it at in-person events. We promote our instruction to students, and we also do visuals when we can. So one example I have on our for faculty web LibGuide is we came up with this visual. We wanted to promote our instruction and how we support faculty in a concise, easy way. So we created this infographic, and I'll link to it in the show notes. We created an infographic. It basically says the 5 benefits of partnering with a librarian. And it just kind of lays everything out there super clear. I mean, I think you were still at Berkeley when we did this. It took us forever to decide on the wordings, but we were very mindful of it. We wanted it to be clear and easy to understand, no library jargon. So honestly, I don't think we promoted that infographic enough. But I think visuals is a great way to promote your services, your instruction services, not just your programming, but your instruction services.
Right.
So what audiences could you or do you market your instruction, and how would it be different for each audience?
Yeah, I think depending on what institution you're at, marketing to anybody would work, because information literacy can stretch across so many different disciplines. And I think for many institutions, early English classes are a natural fit for information literacy, because there's opportunities to introduce students to the basics of research as inquiry, getting to know, you know, library resources because they're new to the institution, introducing them to strategic searching, things like that, kind of making that bridge between high school and college. Or for those who have never attended a high school that had a robust library, just introduce them to libraries in general. That's also something that a lot of institutions have to do. So I think it's helpful to have some sort of standardization of outreach to those classes so that you can reach the most faculty in the English department. In our case, like I said, our head of instruction sends an email before the semester starts to all the English faculty and adjuncts with our request form, and then they kind of go from there. In the last 2 semesters, we started including links to both examples of synchronous and asynchronous materials to really show them what we can provide, rather than just like bullet pointed descriptions. Because I think with everything going on between COVID and going remote, and also in our case, switching our LMS, they just had so much to deal with. So providing concrete examples was more helpful. You know, and for other disciplines where things are less standardized, we each take our own personal approach. When I first started, I was reaching out to department chairs but they were not forwarding my emails on or even responding at all, which I get, you know, they're chairs, they're busy. So this semester I did two new things. First, I looked for specific classes to target, really based on my interests and what parts of the framework I felt I was interested in. So I did like journalism and psychology and mental health services, media and communications. So I picked my classes to target, and then I updated my email template. So in my email, instead of like being vague about how we can collaborate together, similar to what we did as a department, I briefly mentioned what I do as an instruction librarian. I linked to the framework, and then specifically which frames were best for their discipline, and then linked to specific lesson plans that either I've created or that I'd like to adapt. So out of the 8 faculty I wound up sending emails to this semester, I got 1 response, which, you know, isn't an amazing percentage, but considering the lack of overall instruction requests that we got as a department due to COVID and everything, I count it as a win. So I differentiated my template for each discipline area to really show how my instruction could be valuable to each specific area.
We market to our faculty. When I became the director, there were courses that like I inherited that had like standardized library information literacy embedded into them. So we send out targeted emails to all of the sections. So like, for example, it's a 1 random management class, our like English 1101 class. We support the 2000 level and 4000 level internship classes. We used to support the first year experience class. That's where our library orientation used to live. So like those courses, we would reach out to faculty, all the faculty teaching those sections, you know, every section of that particular course every semester with a specific message of how we're supporting their class. And basically the message said like, you know, library support is already embedded in your course. I'm here to support it during week 3 or whatever. But when we wanted to market to new faculty, you know, sometimes we would send welcome emails. Sometimes we would go and introduce ourselves to faculty. We did an initiative once where we tried to target new adjuncts and introduce ourselves. We marketed to faculty we never worked with, but who were supporting an assignment that we previously worked with another professor on. So for example, I had a professor once who course copied from this professor that I worked with. And I said, oh, you know, I introduced myself and I basically said, you know, I've never worked with you before, but I worked with your colleague so-and-so to support this week's, you know, that's already embedded in your course. Are you interested? And here's what I've provided first, you know, in Professor Smith's class. And that got some traction. We also market to students, you know, in our chat services. If we see a student's really struggling, sometimes we'll encourage a student to reach out to their professor and say, you know, can we have a librarian in our class? We also market to students our one-on-one support. So at our library, any instruction, any one-on-one consult that's 15 minutes or more is considered instruction. Mm-hmm. So we encourage our students to make research consultations with us, you know, when we're doing our instruction, when we see them at the desk, when we see them, you know, on chat. Sometimes they need that, you know, now it's Zoom. Consult, but sometimes they need that face-to-face rather than just through chat. Mm-hmm. So those are just a few ways that we, the audiences that we market our instruction services to. I guess there's one other audience that I didn't mention. Over the summer, we wanted to get more involved in the students' progress reports. We wanted to be like more involved in getting involved with the at-risk students, the students who are struggling and they get like, you know, a bad progress report or like a concerning progress report. So we set up a meeting with the advisement team, And we're marketing our services to them to let them know what we do, because they didn't know that we do all this instruction to support our students. So like, that was a different audience for us that we had never thought about. But, you know, because we noticed that advisement was always referring students to the writing center and not the library.
I think that's common. Yeah.
So we said to them, these are all the things that we do. And they're like, they didn't know any of it. So we were really fortunate to tap into that new audience.
I think it's an important point that you made too, about like, when you do your marketing to faculty, thinking about your institution's goal of information literacy and how are faculty supposed to prove that they're meeting that goal, and the fact that you can help them do that, you know, that's still something that I'm trying to understand where I am now, is like, what is actually expected of faculty to prove that they've met that goal? Do they individually have to do that? Or is it something that is more like departmental, or is it institution wide, you know, because we were doing an English assessment project before COVID happened. So like, is that something that, is that how it gets proved, or is it by individual faculty? So that might be something to know about your institution, is how are faculty expected to prove that they're meeting these info lit goals, and then show how you can help them get there. That's a good way to tackle it.
Yeah, it's definitely a slight leg up. Yeah. Don't want to be negative Nancy here, but our institution recognizes information literacy. Information literacy is a college learning objective.
Right.
So when we send out our emails, we say in the email, we are here to support you in, in supporting this college learning objective. You know, this is not it's not the library's thing. This is the college's thing. This is the college initiative that hasn't gotten us very far. I wish it really got us a lot further, but it really hasn't gotten us that far. I mean, I think at the dean level, they care, but I think there's this, as it trickles down to the chairs and then to the full-time faculty, then to the adjuncts, that has a little less weight.
Right. Yep. It might depend on your institution and how things are set up and what weight information literacy holds as an objective and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are some examples of successful marketing and some challenges that you faced with marketing?
I would say it was a challenge for me, and it still is, to get used to this different environment of like Pace versus Berkeley. You were very systematic about how we did our outreach and how we split up classes, and things were mapped out a certain way, curriculum wise. But like I said, with 2000 classes where I am and 6 instruction librarians, it's more of a challenge at a university. So physically having enough people to teach is a challenge, especially because pre-pandemic, the vast majority of our instruction was in person. So the pandemic has opened up things a bit in terms of how faculty might view opportunities for us to be part of their classes, and therefore has been different opportunities for marketing. I'm wondering how that's going to be in the future when it's more hybrid. Now we've got 5% of classes that are hybrid, and we barely deal with those disciplines. Like 1 or 2 people on the team deal with like the nursing classes. But I'm wondering like what this fall is going to look like with that, and if the asynchronous stuff opens up a little more marketing opportunities, maybe we'll create more modules, or, you know, reach out to departments to embed things more in the LMS. But it's been a challenge with so many classes, 6 people trying to do everything in person, and even Zoom honestly has been hard. And that kind of goes into the second challenge, which can be campus curriculum culture. You know, personally, I'm getting more used to and seeing the value in, you know, the critical discussion-based way of teaching. And that can be difficult in online one-shots, as we've seen in the past year. I can only do so many Padlets. So while we might, you know, reach more students via standardized modules, like LibWizard tutorials, does that really fit the curriculum culture of your library and your faculty? There's definitely ways to make tutorials and searching form activities more critical and less rote or memorization learning and things like that, but it's not always the best replacement for in-person group work and discussions if that's more valued where you are. But then again, that can take more time and scheduling. You know, there's pros and cons to those. In terms of successes, I haven't had much success, honestly, with marketing in my current position because I started 5 months pre-pandemic. I had just gotten settled when I started to create outreach and then we were sent home. So like I said, the most success I've had was what I mentioned before, developing that discipline-specific email template. And I'm going to continue to use it when I return from maternity leave in the fall. And I'll report back any triumphs or changes that I make to that email. What I've done in the past, I haven't really been able to do at pace yet, is really use in-person connections, like to build relationships and market myself that way. You know, at Berkeley, going to faculty day or symposiums or campus events was really like the way that I met new faculty or continued relationships with faculty that I knew, to kind of tell them what we do and plant the seed for ideas of partnerships. So in-person can really be the best way to just chat out an idea. That's been successful for me in the past, and I haven't been able to rely on that so much where I am now because of the stupid pandemic.
Yeah. Hopefully those opportunities will present themselves slowly but surely in the fall.
Exactly.
So I have a few successes. I think, you know, you mentioned earlier that we had a systematic way of doing things at Berkeley, and I think that's one success. You know, we have the plan, and you know, having everyone being on the same page. You know, we didn't always have a plan in the beginning. You know, when I started, it was pretty much like a free-for-all, and it was hard. It was hard because I would reach out to one professor, and then someone else would reach out to the same professor, and the professor was confused. Who do I work with? Who do I talk to? Why am I talking to four different librarians?
Right.
So, you know, getting everybody on the same page and trying to create that plan, I think really helped. I mean, I always said to my librarians, these are the courses that we're embedded in, so we have to support these classes. Other than that, you are free to reach out to any course on your campus to make a new connection. So, you know, it was never like, these are the set courses and that's it. But for certain initiatives, I wanted us to be on the same page. And I think that really helped the streamlining process and it's being successful, because we would try new initiatives and I wanted us to be systematic about it so that we could assess it properly. If we're not all doing it the same way, how do we know if it was effective or not?
Mm-hmm.
Like you kind of mentioned, faculty day, that was a great opportunity. You know, in the past, we were very fortunate to have our faculty senate presidents be library supporters. And in many cases, you know, they actually allowed us to have some time on the agenda to promote our services or even in some cases lead an activity. So I remember a former colleague of mine and I, we developed almost this like scenario-based Mad Lib activity for faculty to complete, to learn about library services. And they had to go to like different stations in the room and a librarian would like kind of talk them through it. So that was a fun thing that we got to do.
Right.
But like we even got to go into some of their faculty meetings because we have faculty status. So we would go into their faculty meetings and almost immediately, at least in the School of Liberal Arts, if the dean saw a librarian there, he would reach out and say, Amanda, what's going on with the library? Do you have any updates for us? So like we're always allowed to kind of share that information, which was great. One other thing that was successful until it wasn't was this initiative the college did was writing across the curriculum. They wanted to make sure that the students were writing in not just the classes that were called writing or research and writing. Like they wanted to make sure there were other opportunities. So we saw the list of courses and we were systematic about it. We looked at the list of courses that were under this Right Across the Curriculum initiative And we identified the ones that have the research component in it. And we reached out and we said, we want to help support this initiative be successful in your course. Here's the way that we can support you. And it was pretty successful. We were getting into classes we'd never gotten into before, which was exciting. And then this kind of rolls into the challenges because that program stopped. So we had all of these great initiatives and we were developing and we had plans. And then the college said, oh, this isn't working. It's too complicated. Nobody's following it. And they stopped it. So that could be a challenge when you really get yourself wrapped up into a college initiative and put your effort into it. You know, it's not your initiative. So you're at the mercy of who wants to keep it going or not.
That was disappointing because I really thought at first I was like, what the heck is this? Yeah. But once I understood the concept, I thought it was a really good idea. So it was like, it was disappointing that eventually it just kind of faded away. And especially like you said, because it was kind of an inroad for you guys a little bit. So that stunk.
Yeah. I think another challenge that we have with using email as a marketing tool is that some of our emails never get answered. I have faculty who still haven't gotten back to me from like 3 years ago, which, you know, I mean, that's a challenge and I get it. You know, I'm not blind. Like I understand the emails that these faculty get, but still, it's still discouraging. Also one challenge that I've had with marketing our instruction is motivation, you know, getting people on board, my librarians on board with conducting more outreach can be a challenge. You know, I think, you know, in our heydays, there were some times where I was probably trying to stretch our librarians too thin, trying to do a lot. You know, there was a group of people who were like really into it and they're like, yes, yes, yes. And then there was others that are like, oh, well, I don't know. And, you know, it's a lot. So that could be hard to motivate your people to try new things and reach out more. Another challenge that we faced was branding our instruction. This was something that was done prior to me, but like I inherited it and I tried to continue it was we actually, well, not me, but two predecessors before me created a information literacy program logo and like a little slogan, like information literacy is the key to success, which was really great because it was like an actual, the logo was like a key and the world and it was great, you know? And we used it in our instruction. We used it in our email signatures. Like we really tried to push it and get it out there. And eventually our marketing department was like, we don't want other departments having their own logos.
Right.
So we couldn't move forward with it. But like, obviously if you learn anything about marketing, it's like branding is a big thing. And that was something that, you know, we wanted to continue because it made things look more professional, but we couldn't.
Right. Yeah. I think that's probably a common problem both libraries and like instruction departments within libraries face.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about some fun stuff. What are some pie in the sky ideas that you want to try for marketing?
One thing I'd love to do at Pace, which I had planned to do and was even talking to our like director of reference about, but you know, thanks to COVID again, didn't happen, was to set up an outreach table in the various faculty buildings. So like set up a table at the entrance, offer snacks and handouts and do that in-person relationship building. So, hi, my name is Jessica. I'm an instruction librarian. You know, what do you teach? Oh, international journalism. That's awesome. I love talking to students about like the commodification of information and how, you know, what's the current ethical landscape in news? And just to build on that conversation. And perhaps there would be a way to do it virtually, but I think most people are sick of the virtual stuff at this point. So my pie in the sky version is hopefully in the future to do that kind of, well, I guess start it as just an outreach table with just me and another librarian, and then eventually maybe turn it into more to larger like library in-houses for anybody, but a lot maybe targeting like adjuncts and new faculty and things like that. So that's my pie in the sky idea.
Yeah. I mean, we had some success with that. We were doing At one point we did office hours in the faculty offices so that right. we just kind of planted there the whole time. That was successful when we made some connections that way and at least had some fruitful conversations.
Right.
Yeah. So hopefully, like you said, hopefully things, you know, when things go back, you know, to on site, you know, hopefully you can have those, some of those opportunities.
Yep.
So one of my pie in the sky ideas was I really wanted to get more faculty feedback and student feedback and create promo videos or use the data that we collected in a visual way. So we had this one-on-one feedback form where we automatically sent students to students who, after they had like a one-on-one consult with a librarian, we asked them attitudinal questions and practical questions about the library and their experience. You know, I really wanted to be able to use that data one day to promote our impact, not only on student success, but also to attract more faculty and students. So for example, like I wanted to be able to say something like, of the students who booked a one-on-one with a librarian, 80% said they were more confident that they could, that they can conduct the research they need to complete their research assignment. And then use that data in a promotional way to get students and faculty to use us, you know, like I'm all about the data. So I really wanted to do that. I also wanted to get more student feedback and just share those quotes somewhere, you know, maybe in a flyer or on our website, you know. I would love to do that. I think students listen to their peers, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be a great way to get the students in, you know, supporting and using our services more.
They're like mini testimonials. That would work.
Yes, yes, yes. So what are some practical steps someone could take to start marketing their instruction or their instruction program?
Well, you know, going back to my one successful idea so far, I would say, you know, just write that template, you know, reflect on your instruction philosophy, whittle it down to a concise paragraph, select some of your favorite lesson plans or plans that you've seen others do, and create a list organized by discipline that you can pull from. And then once you have a template, you can go through your course catalog, create a list of disciplines you're interested in working with, and then, you know, brainstorm what order you want to reach out to them in, and make a list and just start sending emails. Another thing you can do is ask others on your team or colleagues outside their institution, outside your institution, how they do it. You know, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. Maybe they have a trick or an outreach idea or a template that you can build on. You know, when I first started, that was kind of what I did, was I asked the last new librarian, how did you do outreach here? And she gave me a template, and I kind of started with that, and I've built onto that. So see what other people have done. And lastly, I can plug the chapter on marketing and instruction in Melissa Wong and Laura Saunders' open access book called Instruction in Libraries and Information Centers. We're gonna post it in the show notes, but it's a good primer in that chapter on the whys and hows of marketing and instruction. This is a quick quote, quote, developing a comprehensive marketing plan is a complex undertaking and outside the scope of this chapter. So doing like a huge marketing plan. Quote, however, a basic marketing strategy can be boiled down to four steps: identifying the audience, determining audience interests and needs, crafting the message, and selecting a medium to disseminate the message. End quote, which is kind of what we've been talking about, right? Like what disciplines, what faculty, what are their needs? What message are you going to send them? How are you going to send it to them? You mentioned all the different ways that you send the message. So it's the chapter has a lot more detailed information that kind of elaborates on what we've been talking about. So I would say read that chapter as just a good first step and get some, wrap your brain around it.
Yeah, it's a great chapter. It's a pretty quick read. And I really like the activities. They're more like guided questions, but like it really gets you to think about those four steps. Mm-hmm. And it's something you could do by yourself, or it's something you could do as a group with your team, or maybe do it by yourself and then come together and
right.
see your different ideas. So definitely check it out. So some of my recommendations for practical next steps would be to, you know, create those templates and make sure that you're all saying a similar message. Look for those system-wide institution initiatives. Don't forget the in-person, you know, develop your elevator pitch, see if you can get invited to those faculty departmental meetings. You know, gauge your faculty and see what they'd be interested in, you know, a refresher or a training of your services. I would also say maybe survey your faculty and then take that information and market to their specific needs. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we think faculty need one thing and they're actually looking for another. So, you know, using that data that you collect to then, you know, target your audience, I think that's a great practical next step. And then I guess one thing I would say is try lots of different things. Mm-hmm. Also know when to stop if you can, like know when something isn't working.
Right.
And to move on from it. I think that's important. Okay. Well, we hope those are some inspiring and practical ideas that you can take away and try to implement. And if you do implement them, please share them with us on Twitter or via email. And we look forward to hearing from you. We're now going to talk about our segment that we always do, triumph, fail, or recommendation. So what do you have for us this week, Jessica?
I just got a quick triumph. I'm finally getting back into presenting a little bit. You know, nothing major, but I was accepted with a colleague to the Metro New York Critical Librarianship Symposium. So we're going to be talking about the switch to remote learning, which will be fun. And we're going to make it, of course, it's a CritLib symposium. So it's going to be an interactive workshop. So that's fun. And then we just got accepted, the same colleague and then someone else, for a lightning talk for the ACRL University Library Section Current Topics Discussion Group. And we're going to be talking about our staff development committee and how, what our charge was and how we developed that and like the practical ideas that we use to do some professional development within our department. So just two quick presentations coming up before I go on leave. And but it just feels good to kind of get back into things a little bit after taking like a 2-year break.
That's so exciting. Yeah, I haven't presented in a while either. I'm itching. I'm just looking for like the right opportunities. I mean, like we've talked about, like, you know, budgets and you know, availability and COVID and all that stuff. So I haven't had that right opportunity either, but that's exciting. I can't wait to hear how they go.
Yeah, definitely. I'll report back. What about you?
I have a fail.
Oh no.
I do. No, it's, you know, it's an annoying fail too. So as I've talked about a lot on this podcast, I support our honors program. And one of the things that we've wanted to put together for a while is a repository of the honor students' papers. Mm. And I kind of decided to take that on myself because at the time, nobody else wanted to do it with me. So I'm like, all right, I guess I'll put this LibGuide together. And I've been putting it on the back burner for like 3 years now. And like, I have it on my to-do list and it's just like glaring at me. And like, I don't know what it is, but like, maybe I'm not interested in it and I'm not excited about it, but like it came up in an email last week. And I felt so terrible about it. Cause like, I have no excuse. Like I've had the time. It's just, I don't know. I have the template. Like I have it. It was voted on. Like everyone was like, yeah, it's good. You know, go with that one. I just have no motivation to do it. So I'm trying to motivate myself to get it done, but I just don't know why. Like I'm just dragging my feet about it.
But I guess it's probably a blessing in disguise. Cause sometimes I know when I jump into things that my brain's not wrapped around, I wind up having to redo it. So even though you said like you have the template, it's been voted on and you know what you have to do. Like, I think still, if you don't have the motivation, you're not going to be happy with it in the end, if you just slug your way through it. So hopefully soon you'll just, that motivation will be like, ding.
I mean, I hope so, but like I said,
there's nobody like waiting behind you going like, get this done either, which I think is maybe part of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it comes up every once in a while in conversation and I'm like, yeah, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. I'm not working on it. Right. I try, like I look at it and then I look at the files and I'm like, I'm going to do something else.
Right. And when there's so many other things waiting in the wings, it's like,
I know. Whatever. I know. And like you said, no one's pressuring me for it, but like it comes up and then I get like embarrassed about it. And like, I like change the subject.
Right.
So fail on my part.
Right. It's okay. It'll be a triumph soon.
I hope.
So that wraps up another episode of The Librarian's Guide to Teaching. Here's where you can find us. You can find the podcast at librarian_guide. You can find Jessica at librarygeek611. You can find me, Amanda, at historybuff820. And you can always email us at infolitteachingpodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to rate and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen. We would love to hear from you in the reviews as well.